Reveal is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. For months now, we've been investigating the Trump administration's policy of family separation. In all, more than 2,600 children were taken from their parents at the border. And even now, 2 months after a federal court deadline to reunite parents and their children, there are still kids who remain separated. And we're only now learning about the mechanics of how these separations worked. Today, we're digging into that with the help of a young child who was taken from his mom, a child with a remarkable memory. A few months back, we broke a story about an office building in Phoenix. We found out that immigrant kids who were separated from their parents were being kept there. This building wasn't designed to be used as a shelter, and it wasn't a licensed child care facility. And children were being kept there overnight with no showers, no yard to play in, nothing. MVM, a big defense contractor, was running the operation. We learned what was happening from interviews, documents, and videos of kids being marched into the building.
But the only people who can really tell us what happened inside of that office building are the people who were inside of that office building.
That's Reveal immigration reporter Aura Bagato. Hey, Aura.
Hey, Al.
Okay, so initially, we only knew so much about what the conditions were like inside the office building, but now that's changed.
Yes, thanks to this little boy. This is Wilson. He's 7.
Yo ya sé contar hasta el número 10.
¿De veras?
En inglés, no.
Sí,
en inglés.
No.
No. Yo no lo sé.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And despite everything that's happened to him and everything that could still happen to him, he's just this irrepressibly happy kid. He's smart, he's quick, and he has a really good memory.
¿Cuándo te llevaron a dónde?
A la oficina.
¿Qué oficina?
Una oficina que le daban.
And so here you can hear him say, la oficina, la oficina. So yeah, he was in that MVM office. He slept there. And that's the most basic thing here. No one should have ever slept in that office. But let me back up a little bit and tell you about Wilson's story. I want you to meet his mom, too.
Maria Antonia Lario Soto.
This is Maria Antonia Lario Soto. Everyone calls her Tonita. And Tonita and Wilson left Guatemala towards the end of May this year when Wilson was just 6 years old.
Es en buses. In carros.
They traveled through Mexico and they crossed the border in Arizona. They literally describe walking through this gate on the border. And they were picked up by Border Patrol and they were taken to a Border Patrol station where they're put in a hielera, in an icebox.
And these are really cold rooms, right? They're known as iceboxes because people describe them as freezing cold. And they're just given a Mylar sheet to stay warm.
Yes, and I've been reporting on these iceboxes, these hieleras, for almost a dozen years. And in all of those years, Tonita gave me one of the best descriptions I've ever heard of these places. A concrete room, no windows. It's full to the rim of women and children. And you can tell how long people have been there by how they smell, because there's no place to take a shower. You get a cup of noodles for every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you have to use that same cup to fill up your water at this little sink that's literally attached to the toilet that people use. And you don't get a change of clothes. You get this little mat to sleep on. And Tonita told me that she would find a spare piece of mat at a woman's feet and have Wilson curl up there just so he would have a safe place to sleep.
So Tonita and Wilson, how long were they there?
Yeah, they were there 6 days waiting. And it's important to note that Tonita knows that the government is going to take Wilson away from her. It's one of the very first things that they tell her when they arrive.
Entonces yo le dije al niño, mira mi amor, te van a llevar. Y comencé a llorar.
She's saying that she started crying in front of her son when she tells him that they're going to take him away from her.
Y me dice.
And he told me,
no llores, mamá.
Don't cry, mom.
No llores.
Don't cry.
Y me limpió.
And
he
cleaned the tears off my face with his jacket.
Yo queriéndome hacer fuerte para no llorar, pero...
And I wanted to be strong for him, to not cry.
No se puede.
But can't be done. Some of the other women that she was there with try to make her feel better by saying, look, this is no place for kids. He'll be better off if they take him.
Pero eso no lo consuela aún.
But it doesn't make her feel any better.
Eso es duro.
She describes it as being hit, like someone is physically hitting her, an emotional gut punch.
Es el golpe más duro que a uno le da.
After 6 days, they wake her up at 3:30 in the morning and they tell her that they're taking him.
And who is they?
Al, that's a really good question. I've always thought that Border Patrol took these kids. That's what we've been told. ICE has also said that they don't do that. But what they are doing is contracting out to this private company, the defense contractor, MVM. And that's who takes Wilson.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Back when family separation was still happening this summer, MVM, a private contractor, was actually the one physically separating some children from their parents. Is that right?
Correct. When I talked with Wilson, I showed him a bunch of photos of different people. Some I had printed out, and some were just photos that I had screenshotted on my phone. Some of the photos are of MVM employees, but some of the people in these images are just random people I found online. And I wanted to make sure to do that because I didn't want to lead Wilson on to any conclusions.
Pero no sé si lo reconoces. ¿Lo reconoces a él?
And here you can hear me saying, I don't know if you recognize this person. Do you recognize him? And
nah.
Wilson is saying, no.
Nah.
No.
Nah.
No. There's a whole bunch of no's. And then suddenly he does recognize one face.
No, al que estaba atrás, sí. Ese sí.
He sounds very sure.
¿Quién es él?
El que lo llevó con la vez.
Wilson was sure, and he was right. Tonita also confirmed that this is the person who took him from her. I also have documents to back this up. His name is Demetrio Reyes, and we know that he's driven children for MVM.
I want to talk more about Demetrio Reyes, but first, tell me about how Tanita and Wilson meet him. You said the staff from the icebox, they wake them up in the middle of the night, and then what happens?
They call Tonita's name, and she's told to bring her son, and she describes having to walk over people to make her way out of the hielera, and she goes into another room that she describes as a sort of hallway room that's full of benches, and that's where she is with Wilson and a whole bunch of other kids, but they're all teenagers except for her son, and remember, he's just 6 years old at this time. They all wait, and the kids are called one by one. And finally, Demetrio Reyes calls Wilson's name. Tonita has always described Wilson as a very obedient little kid. And so when Wilson hears his name, he just goes towards the door. And Tonita runs after him to try and say goodbye. And at first, Reyes says that she can't do that.
No me dijo para qué, pero me dijo, nomás yo estoy trabajando y mi trabajo es... Este me dijo.
She says he basically tells her, look, I'm just doing my job. But he does let her say goodbye.
Ya no pude hablar.
She hugs Wilson, and she told me she couldn't even talk. She had no voice left.
Me imaginé, ¿será que mi hijo va solo? ¿Para dónde lo llevarán? No me dieron información.
She wonders if Wilson is... going alone. She wonders where he's going. She tries to ask for information, but Reyes won't tell her. One of the things about this is that a lot of the people who work for MVM transporting the kids, they're often almost kids themselves. Demetrio Reyes is 24 years old. He's a college student. He's a veteran. He's Tonita's age. And I want to show you this picture that he posted on Facebook. It was just 3 days after he had taken Wilson away from Tonita.
It's a picture of him in a tree with his mom under him. And he's holding a cute young relative, I imagine. And the kid, he may be 3 to 5 years old. He's got a Buzz Lightyear t-shirt on. And the caption beside the photo is, love my mama.
I mean, he had just taken Wilson away from his own mama just a few days before. And it's difficult to know what's going through his mind when he posts this, but there's definitely an irony here.
I know you've left a lot of messages for Demetrio Reyes and haven't gotten a response. So we just don't know what he thinks about his individual role in all of this. But I gotta say, I'm just so struck that this is a brown man taking a brown boy from his brown mom.
If you think about it, it sort of makes sense because so many people who are apprehended at the border do speak Spanish. And so I think it facilitates that communication. If you want to take a child from their parent, why not say it in their language?
I mean, behind all of this, there are serious questions about race, how race plays into these larger policy decisions. You have to reflect upon the fact that when Donald Trump was on the campaign trail, he called Mexican immigrants rapists. He said they bring drugs and crime. And then when he becomes president, his administration implemented a zero tolerance policy and family separation. And to do all that, we're learning that the government is relying on paid contractors, private American citizens, to do the work of separating children from their parents.
We think of the government or Border Patrol or some nebulous entity that is taking these kids, but these are individual people who made this process happen.
And what did MVM have to say about this?
I've asked MVM for an interview many times throughout my reporting. When I contacted this time, they declined. But spokesman Joseph Arabit sent me a long email that included the following statement. He wrote, and I quote, "It would be inaccurate to describe MVM or any of its employees of, quote, taking or separating a child from his or her parent. That authority rests solely with the responsible government agency," end quote. So MVM is making this distinction and saying that there's a government agency that's accountable here. But Tonita knows who physically took her son away from her, and Wilson recognized him too. It's not a uniformed officer of the United States government. It was Demetrio Reyes in a polo shirt, an MVM worker.
And MVM's rationalization for this, it's basically saying, like, let's say I was trying to build something, and I had two pieces of wood, I need a nail to hold them together, and I use a hammer to drive that nail into the wood. I cannot excuse the hammer from that equation. If I don't have the hammer, the nail doesn't go into the wood. In this case, MVM is the hammer. They are the tool that is actually going out and separating these children from their parents. And so basically, the people who got their hands dirty was MVM.
They got their hands dirty and their pockets pretty full.
Since 2014, MVM has secured government contracts worth up to $225 million for the transportation of immigrant children. In July, ICE Press Secretary Jennifer Elzea told us that MVM is authorized to use office spaces as waiting areas for minors awaiting same-day transportation. She also said these offices are not for overnight housing. That's a part of the contract. So we requested a list of locations where MVM was authorized to hold children. But ICE told us no such record exists, meaning ICE didn't track where MVM was keeping all those kids. For their part, MVM has declined to tell us how many offices it used to keep children overnight or where those offices are located. When we come back, Wilson tells us what it was like to live inside that Phoenix office building, surrounded by strangers. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. A network of anti-democratic groups are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/MJ.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, family separation through the eyes of a child. After coming to the U.S. from Guatemala, 6-year-old Wilson and his mom, Tanita, spent 6 days in a Border Patrol holding cell known as an icebox. Then, in the middle of the night, Wilson was taken from his mom. The man who took him wasn't a Border Patrol agent or an ICE officer, but a private citizen. A 24-year-old man named Demetrio Reyes, who works for the defense contractor MVM, the company that kept separated children in a vacant Phoenix office building. Reveal immigration reporter Auda Bagato has been following this story, and she's here to tell us what came next for Wilson.
Wilson is put in a van and taken to the office building. He remembers a lot. He told me that Reyes was nice to him, that he spoke to him in Spanish.
¿Y qué comían para cenar?
He also remembered what he ate.
Sandwich y manzana.
Entonces, para desayuno, almuerzo y cena, ¿siempre era puro sándwich?
Sí. Sandwich y papita.
Cheese sandwiches with lettuce for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
¿Y para tomar?
Agua y jugo.
¿Qué tipo de jugo?
De manzana.
With water or maybe apple juice. Sometimes they threw in chips. And by the way, MVM's spokesman told me that there were other foods available, like oatmeal and hot breakfast sandwiches. But I asked Wilson about this several times, and he never described anything but a cold cheese sandwich. Something else I asked Wilson to do was to draw me pictures of where he was kept. So let me show you a few of those. This is Wilson's first drawing for me, and this is what he describes as where he slept in the office. It's very abstract children's art, but you can sort of see...
I get it. These are like the sleeping bags or the bunks that they were in, right?
Yeah, those are the mats or mattresses that they had on the floor. There are 8 of them.
Mm-hmm. These are actually good drawings. I'm a child art connoisseur because I have 4 of them, so I've had to go through this many times. You learn how to translate. Okay, this one is him and a friend.
This is a drawing that Wilson says is him and someone else who was in this office building with him washing their hair in the sink.
¿Y en la oficina en que te lavabas el pelo era la misma oficina donde dormiste?
Sí.
He says that the office where he slept was the same place where he washed his hair in the sink. And he washed his hair in the sink because there wasn't a shower there.
So how long was he in the office?
So he was in the office for 2 days. And on the 3rd day, he got moved to a shelter. He drew me a picture of what it was like when he prayed for his mom. He told me that he used to pray for his mom all the time. And the way he did it is he would tuck himself into bed and place himself under a blanket. And then under the blanket, pray for his mom. It was almost 3 weeks before he and Tonita got to talk.
Como a los 20 días.
She was in a detention center. She'd been moved to Colorado by then.
Me dieron una llamada de 4 minutos apenas.
They were on the phone for 4 minutes. And since I'd never talked to my son by phone because he'd always been by my side,
entonces no le reconocí la voz.
I didn't recognize his voice.
And then she says the phone cut out without warning. In all, Wilson was separated from Tanita for nearly 2 months.
And Wilson's birthday is in June, and he turned 7 alone in a shelter.
When they were finally reunited, Wilson and Tanita flew to Fort Smith, Arkansas, where they had family. Now, Auda, you were there with the family waiting for them to arrive. You sat with them while they talked to Wilson on the phone before his flight. What was that like?
First, let me play this for you.
Hola.
Hola, precioso. ¿Quieres decirle hola a la abuela también?
Hola. Sí.
That sounds like a completely different atmosphere. It's so joyful.
Hola, abuela. ¿Cómo está usted?
Bien. Por aquí te estamos esperando.
Sí.
Te voy a dar unos cuantos abrazos y cuantos besitos.
So, how has Wilson handled the transition from the shelter back to his family life?
When he finally gets to the house with his family, everything is different. He has his own bed. He's with his mom. They sleep in the same room in this bunk bed. And he hears the voices, the accents of the people that are familiar to him. This is his family. We walk through his whole garden and he's pointing out the name of every plant, every single everything. And I'm pretty good with plants and I was just blown away. This is like this little baby botanist out there. He's eating the foods he knows. His great-grandmother made tortillas by hand. They're sharing a meal together. You can just hear it in that giddy laughter. It's just, it's so pure. And I feel like everything that was, you know, the hardcore, the tragedy and the trauma, we've put a period on that in some ways, and now it almost feels like the next chapter in his book.
And Wilson's actually started his next chapter, right?
Yes, he started school. I went with him to meet his teacher for the first time, and from the minute we got in the car, right, we're like about to go to the school for the first time, he was so excited. He was like bouncing off the walls. He's yelling phrases in English and Kekchi, which is the indigenous language that he picked up from his friends at the shelter. And he's, you know, playing with my recording kit. And I won't play you all of that because it'll hurt your eardrums. But he was so excited, he gave himself hiccups.
I can do it. I don't know.
Thank you.
Do you want me to?
Yeah,
I forgot.
I don't know.
And it was so awesome to see him there. He's got a cubby in his new classroom. He's got his name on the little desk where he's going to sit next to all of his little friends. And, you know, walking into that classroom just reminded me that Wilson is a first grader. He really is that little.
This is so great. This story started off so hard. Now you're just making me smile the whole time. It's so good to hear it.
¿Cómo se siente?
Feliz.
Antonita was happy too.
De haber venido a presentar a mí.
That she came to introduce her son. That he's going to learn.
Aunque fue duro el viaje, pero
even though the journey was hard, now she's happy.
Está pasando, ¿verdad? Que lo vine a presentar y ya mañana le toca la escuela.
There are countless questions that still remain about her immigration case, and she doesn't know what's going to happen there. But she does know that her son is finally in school.
Hi, I'm Julia.
This is Wilson.
All right, how are you, Wilson?
Lately.
Let's see, Wilson, I think you are right,
yeah,
here.
See
you right here.
Mañana.
Okay.
We met his teacher. Her name is Miss Huff, and she was really great. She was so sweet with him. And at one point, she asked him what probably a lot of teachers are asking kids.
So, Wilson, what did you do this summer? What did you do this summer?
There's always going to be this shadow, right?
¿Qué sí que hizo este verano?
I mean, how does Wilson possibly begin to answer that? So I explained a little.
Yes.
My name is Auda.
Hi.
And they'll probably tell you a little more.
Okay.
You may have heard about the family separations.
Yes.
So they're separated.
Oh, okay. So all right.
That was a big part of the summer.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I am glad you're here. You have a nice smile. And you have happy eyes. I'm so happy you're here, okay?
Arigato, thank you so much.
Thank you, Al.
Wilson's been in school for about a month and a half, and his mom tells us he's doing well. He even joined the Cub Scouts. Thanks to Reveal's Auto Bogato and Casey Miner, who produced that story. So, why did so many kids like Wilson get separated from their parents? The White House says it's because families were breaking federal law, but that's not exactly what we found. That's up next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. How do we get here? How is it that thousands of children were stripped from their parents by the United States government? Well, to answer that, I want to take you back to March of 2017 and an interview between CNN's Wolf Blitzer and John Kelly, who was the Secretary of Homeland Security at the time. He's Trump's chief of staff now.
Are you, the Department of Homeland Security, considering a new initiative that would separate children from their parents if they try to enter the United States illegally?
Yes, I am considering, in order to deter more movement along this terribly dangerous network, I am considering exactly that. They will be well cared for as we deal with their parents.
Parents and kids being separated as a deterrent. Kelly's statements were met with outrage, and it didn't take long for him to walk them back. But by the fall of 2017, lawyers and journalists were documenting some of the first cases. Family separation was beginning, quietly. Then, this spring, the caravan happened.
A caravan of immigrants marching towards America, where we live.
We begin with the caravan at the border. Nearly 200 men, women, and children are hoping to step foot on U.S. soil.
Hundreds of immigrants, many fleeing violence in Central America, traveled to the U.S.-Mexico border. And many of them planned to enter the United States at a border crossing, an official port of entry. Their goal, to claim asylum, legally.
Are you watching that mess that's going on right now with the caravan coming up? And our laws are so weak.
The caravans were a thumb in the eye to the president, who promised to be tough on immigration, especially because he couldn't do much to stop them. But he could crack down on people who crossed illegally.
Zero tolerance policy. Attorney General Jeff Sessions laying down the law with a brand new immigration crackdown right at the border.
Here's how Jeff Sessions said zero tolerance would work.
If you violate the law, you subject yourself to prosecution.
In other words, Sessions wants every single person who crosses illegally to be prosecuted for a federal crime known as improper entry by alien. And he wants them to go to jail. Even parents traveling with young children.
Non-citizens who cross our borders unlawfully with children, they are the ones who broke the law. They are the ones who endangered their own children with this trek.
With parents facing incarceration, the administration argued it had no choice but to separate kids, and kids can't go to jail with their parents. Suddenly, family separations exploded. And no longer was it being described as some radical new policy. Now, the White House said it was about enforcing the law, cracking down on people who cross illegally. We've been looking into this claim. Nina Sotija, with our partners at the Texas Tribune, along with Reveal's Aniancy Diaz-Cortez, have been following one family for months, a family you first heard about on our show back in June. When they crossed the border this summer, this family says they did everything in their power to follow the law. They weren't prosecuted for crossing illegally, yet, for some reason, they were still touched by every aspect of Trump's family separation policy. Nina takes the story from here.
I first visited Hilda Aldana back in July at her apartment in suburban L.A.
Hola,
¿cómo
están?
¿Cómo está? ¿Cómo está?
Bien, gracias. Y usted, pásenle adelante. Mucho gusto.
She's gracious and dressed up to meet me.
¿Usted es Nina?
Sí, sí, yo soy Nina. Entonces, hablamos por teléfono.
Hilda is in her mid-40s, young for a grandmother.
Y discúlpeme el tiradero que va a haber porque apenas andamos preparando. Permítame.
She's in the middle of painting and apologizes for the mess. She says she's getting the apartment ready for her four grandkids and her daughter, Sandy. She thought they'd be here weeks ago.
Por haber tomado este tiempo de venir a mi casa.
In May, Hilda got a call from Sandy. She was with her kids, all boys, ages 12, 8, 5, and her youngest, a baby, just a few months old. They'd been traveling for weeks, and now they were standing at an official port of entry, a bridge stretching over the Rio Grande. Before crossing, they dialed Hilda.
Dice que en la línea porque me llamaron.
The kids called me before getting in line to surrender to Border Patrol. They said that in line, they gave the baby a happy birthday hug because he was turning 5 months. They told me, we're about to surrender to Border Patrol.
Sandy and the kids were coming to claim asylum.
Okay, mis amores.
I said, okay, my loves. First, God willing, we'll see each other very soon.
Sí, mamá Hilda, dice, porque llegando quiero que...
Yes, Mama Hilda, because as soon as we arrive, we want you to take us to eat pizza or hamburgers. Okay, my loves, whatever you want.
A few days passed. Then Hilda got another call from Sandy. She was in Border Patrol custody.
But the sad part was when my daughter called me on Monday. She said, I'm here with the kids, but they just told me that they're going to take away the kids. Why?
¿Por qué?
Why is a good question. Remember, the Trump administration says family separation was all about enforcing the law, prosecuting people who were crossing illegally. But Sandy says she did everything by the book. She went to a bridge and waited in line. She turned herself over to Border Patrol at a port of entry. It's one of the many ways to claim asylum, and it's all totally legal. But Sandy's kids were taken from her anyway and sent two states away to Arizona. And she got locked up in an immigration detention center called Port Isabel at the southern tip of Texas. It's really hard for reporters to get into immigration detention centers to do interviews. But it's different if you're a lawyer. And at the height of the family separation crisis, lawyers were flocking to Port Isabel.
Once you're going in, you're sort of in a different world.
Ruby Powers is an immigration lawyer who specializes in asylum.
There's cameras everywhere. There's barbed wire. Pop a trunk. Show your insurance. Show your ID.
I mean, do you feel like you're driving into a prison, basically, when you go to this facility?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it definitely looks like a jail. It is a jail.
Ruby went to Port Isabel to meet with about a dozen parents whose kids had been taken from them. I asked her if she could meet Sandy, too.
It was a really busy day. I had to wait 2 hours to get a visitation room. And then they brought me her.
Sandy was escorted into the room. She was wearing a blue jumpsuit. Ruby says she was friendly, well composed.
I think I said, my name is Ruby. I'm an immigration attorney. I'm here to help you.
It was one of Ruby's last meetings before heading back to Houston.
And I thought, I'm just going to talk to her for a little bit and then I'm going to go. But when she started telling me her story, it's almost like time slowed down and all I could think about was what she was saying.
What Sandy said is that back in Guatemala, she'd been abused, her life threatened. Local police and gang members targeted her and her family. I've seen records from the Guatemala National Police that back some of this up. For her safety, we're not disclosing her full name or her kids' names. Years ago, Sandy had tried coming to the U.S. illegally and got deported. Because of that, it's unlikely she'll be able to get asylum now. But she is eligible for something you could call asylum light, which could allow her to stay in the U.S. and work. Ruby says Sandy's case to stay here is a strong one of the strongest she heard during her visits at Port Isabel. Sandy also told Ruby about her four sons. She hadn't seen them in about a month. She described the moment her baby was taken from her.
She told me that the guard said they had to take her baby away. And she said, but I'm still breastfeeding him, you know. And they said, doesn't matter. She said, no, but I'm breastfeeding. And they said, no, we still have to take them. And then our government took breastfeeding a baby away from her. I just couldn't believe it. I don't know what else to say about that.
I was never able to interview Sandy in person, but I did get a chance to talk to her over the phone. Sandy happened to call while I was visiting Ilda's apartment in Southern California. She was calling from the detention center to talk to her mom.
How are you, my dear daughter?
Sandy says she's desperate to leave.
Did you talk to the kids, mommy?
Sandy tells Ilda that whenever she talks to her kids on the phone, they tell her they want to be with her. She asks if Ilda's been able to talk with them.
Yes, because on Friday they called. I spoke with one of the kids. He said, Mommy, I want to leave here. I want to go with you.
Sandy says it's not just her being punished. It's the children, too. When Sandy says this, Ilda looks like she's about to cry.
The truth, mija, I don't have words for you. I understand you as a mother.
Sandy tells Ilda there's no one there to hug the baby, no one to make him feel the warmth of his mother.
Yes, that was something else the children complained about, that they don't let the kids hug the baby, not the 12-year-old, 8-year-old, or 5-year-old. How is that possible, that they don't let them hug each other? They are brothers. They have never been apart.
What torments Sandy is that the baby's finally getting old enough to recognize people, but the only people he's seeing are strangers.
You have to have faith, my daughter, because it's the saddest thing for a mother to be separated from her children. Okay, mija. Have a good night. We'll talk tomorrow, okay? Okay, blessings, my queen. Bye, my sweet girl.
Ilda's got her own story to tell, one that connects to Sandy's. She says her family's been persecuted in Guatemala for generations. She lifts her shirt to show me a scar that runs across her stomach. Wow. It looks like she was cut in half and sewn back together. For years, she's avoided looking at it in the mirror.
Fui secuestrada, estuve por 2 años. Me violaban. Me torturaban. Y yo me traté de escapar.
She tells me it's a reminder of when she was kidnapped, raped, and tortured. Ilda's family was in the military during Guatemala's bloody civil war. She thinks that has a lot to do with why she and Sandy were targeted. It's Ilda who encouraged Sandy to ask for asylum and do everything legally. But now that Sandy and the kids are locked up and apart, Ilda says it feels like the whole asylum thing was a lie. I reached out to ICE and Customs and Border Protection, but they couldn't answer my question. Why did the government take Sandy's kids this summer when there's no evidence that she crossed the border illegally? And it wasn't just Sandy. Many parents who were never prosecuted for this were still separated from their kids. There are dozens of examples listed in a lawsuit against the government.
The American Civil Liberties Union is suing the Trump administration over forced separations of asylum-seeking families.
The lawsuit was filed back in February, months before family separation was really in the news. The case is famous now. It's called Miss L versus ICE. In court documents, the administration had to try to explain why it separated those parents, parents who hadn't been accused of entering the country illegally. Reading through, you can see the government's arguments shift. First, it says it separated the plaintiff and child because it wasn't sure they were really related, but they were. That was proven by a DNA test. So then the government argues different reasons about why they needed to be separated. Those arguments weren't enough to persuade the court. The judge ruled that this type of family separation went beyond its lawful reach. In the end, I can't tell you why the government separated children from parents like Sandy. All I know for sure is it wasn't about a crackdown on illegal immigration. It wasn't about the Trump administration enforcing the law, because many families didn't break it.
Late yesterday, this California judge, a Bush appointee, by the way, issued a nationwide injunction ordering immigration agents to take several new steps. First,
in late June, the judge in that court case issued an injunction. Now there was a deadline, a ticking clock. The government would have to reunite families who'd been separated, whether they crossed illegally or not. Kids would need to be back with their parents within 30 days. The youngest, even sooner.
The deadline to reunite the youngest migrant children with their families now less than a week away.
Separating families was one thing, but could the government put them back together? It wasn't clear there was ever a plan for that. It was a massive logistical challenge. We're talking about thousands of children in shelters across the country. Parents locked up, thousands of miles away. How is this going to happen?
There are reports of mass confusion surrounding this process. Joining us now is Alex Azar, the Health and Human Services Secretary. Mr. Secretary, thank you for your time this morning. There does seem to be a lot of confusion on this matter. What can you tell us this morning to clear some of that up?
Absolutely. Thank you. First off, there's absolutely no confusion on our part. We have the kids, and we are working to comply with the court's order. And what that involves, you know,
the government says everything's fine. But with the deadline of July 10th just a few days away, we call Sandy's mom, Hilda.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Hilda has no idea what's going to happen next. Hilda tells me there's a lot of confusion. She's had trouble reaching Sandy in detention. And now she has to hand over documents proving she's related to the grandkids. Hilda doesn't know when or if Sandy will see the kids again. And if they're all back together, how would they get to Hilda? A day before the deadline, the Trump administration admits it's not going to make it. Maybe only half the youngest children will be reunited with their parents. Sandy's kids are at a shelter for migrant children in Phoenix, Arizona. It's run by a Texas-based company called Southwest Key. So I call up the company.
Hi, is this Jeff?
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, my name is Nina Satija. I'm a reporter calling from the Texas Tribune. How are you?
Fine.
That's Jeff Eller, a spokesman for Southwest Key. Many of the kids separated at the border are staying at Southwest Key shelters.
My interest is in whether Southwest Key is sort of about the plan for reunifying these kids, you know, in Southwest Key shelters with their parents.
We're watching the court the same way you are and waiting to hear on the next steps from the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
Okay. So does that mean that you all haven't heard any plans specifically from them?
I just said we're waiting to hear on next steps from the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
I would imagine that you all would have liked to get some information about how those kids will be transported. So that's just what I'm trying to figure out.
We're waiting as I got nothing more than we're waiting on direction from the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
Without mentioning Sandy's name, I tell him about her case. I've just learned that she's been moved to a detention center near her kids in Phoenix.
We actually know of one mother who's been transferred to an Arizona detention center. Her youngest child is in the Phoenix Southwest Key facility.
I ask Jeff if he thinks they're going to be reunited, but he gives me the same response.
We're waiting to hear on next steps from the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
Okay, so is it fair to say that that means you have not received any direction so far? That's what I want to make sure of.
I'm not going down that path. We're waiting to hear from the office.
I want to know how this is going to play out for Sandy. Tomorrow's the deadline. Will she get her baby son back? What about her other three kids? I decide to stay put so I can call my sources, work the phones to find out whatever I can. My colleague, Aniyansi Diaz-Cortez, heads to Phoenix to try and track down Sandy.
I get to Phoenix just after midnight on Tuesday, July 10th. Kids under five are supposed to be reunited today. That means Sandy should be back together with her six-month-old baby. The first place I go is the shelter where all of Sandy's kids are being kept. It's early morning, and I'm on the sidewalk, right by the main entrance.
Okay, we're outside of Southwest Key.
Okay.
And I'm going to go up to try to ask what is going on. Hi there. How are you? I can't come in here. Do you guys have any information? Oh, I'm on private property, so I have to stay over there? Okay, thank you.
It's a bit of a mob scene. There are news vans, and I hear that kids are already being moved. Maybe Sandy's kids, but there's no way to know.
You could see the line of children walk through a parking lot at this Phoenix shelter this morning. Then some of them appear to get into a white van.
So I call Nina to check in. Hey, Nina, you crazy busy?
No, go ahead.
I give Nina my update and ask her what she knows. And what's happening on your end?
I'm at my desk in Austin, glued to the phone, trying to figure out how this reunification process is supposed to happen today for children under five.
Nina tells me she got a tip from an immigration lawyer. Sandy might be reunited with her kids at an ICE field office. It's called the Enforcement Removal and Operations Center, and it's at 2035 North Central Avenue.
Yeah, then I'd say get out of there. Go to 2035 North Central.
Okay, perfect, Nina. All right, good luck. Call me if anything. I drive 10 minutes to the ICE office, a sleek-looking building in the middle of the sprawl of downtown Phoenix. More news vans, of course. This is where the kids were dropped off.
Cameras caught white vans taking groups of children from Southwest Key facilities in the valley and dropping them off here. The federal government is not expected to meet that deadline. In fact, at last check, only four of the 102 children have been reunited with their families.
Outside the building, there are more guards. They won't tell me anything, and they won't even let me park.
So there's an ICE police officer. He's waiting outside. He has a bulletproof vest. There's like a lovely food truck. Are we allowed to get food?
Hi there. Another question. Are we allowed to go to the food truck and get food?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I park near the food truck to get as close as I can.
Thank you.
Then I get a text from Nina.
It says, based on recent government court filing, none of the four kids who were reunited with their parents so far would be Sandy's kid.
I spend an hour outside the office. No one knows what's happening. Officials aren't talking. And then...
Bueno.
¿Cómo está, Hilda?
Ay, no, mija. Casi no he dormido nada.
Finally, I hear from Sandy's mom, Hilda. She says she's barely slept, that Sandy is definitely getting out of immigration detention today.
Sandy sale hoy.
Hoy. Okay. Okay. Ahorita estamos esperando afuera del centro. I tell her, yes, I'm at the office where Sandy might be reunited with the kids. And then Hilda gives me a surprise.
Ella ya está con los niños.
Ah, ella ya está con los niños. She says, no, it's already happened. They're together now. Sandy is with her kids, but they're still in ICE custody. She tells me the kids were reunited early in the morning, but what's happened since, she doesn't know. ¿Y dónde está, Hilda?
Eso no me lo dicen. Eso no me lo dicen a mí. Ellos solo están... Okay, estamos en comunicación entonces.
Gracias, Hilda. Okay, hasta luego. Bye-bye. When I talk to Hilda later that afternoon, she still doesn't know when Sandy and the kids will be allowed to leave. All she can tell me is they have bus tickets, a Greyhound from Phoenix to Los Angeles, leaving after midnight. I decide to head to Los Angeles too, to see the whole family back together again at Hilda's apartment. So I hit the road. When I get to Hilda's, the blinds are open. The front door open wide. Manchas the dog is jumping on the three boys. Sandy's baby is sleeping in the corner. The only obvious sign of what they'd just been through was the GPS monitor on Sandy's ankle and the circles under everyone's eyes. I ask about the journey from Phoenix. Terrible, Sandy tells me. They waited for 8 hours at the Greyhound station, then rode the bus all night long. At one point, the baby wakes up and is screaming. Sandy puts him on her hip. Shh, 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 she whispers to him as I fumble to turn on the recorder.
Test 1, 2, test 1, 2.
We talk.
¿Y cuánto tiempo estuvo separada de sus hijos, Sandy?
Un mes y medio.
I ask her about the separation, about how she felt when she was in detention.
¿Y qué pensaba cuando estaba allá adentro?
Solo era llorar y llorar.
Nothing but crying, she says. So much crying. An inexplicable sadness. Impossible to articulate.
¿Y me puede hablar de la felicidad que siente ahorita? ¿Qué es lo que siente estar reunida con ellos?
I ask her to tell me how it feels to be with her kids again.
No, pues, es algo muy lindo.
She says, it's something quite beautiful after so much time being separated from them. It was something truly difficult.
La tranquilidad para mí es esa de él. La única es estar con mis hijos, estar bien y...
I'm at peace after all we've been through. Now it's time to move on, Sandy explains. While I'm there, Sandy's baby starts coughing up formula. She used to nurse him, breastfeed him, but her milk went dry when she was in detention. After all this, Sandy can't even feed her own kid anymore.
Fue algo muy duro, un trauma muy feo vivir todo lo que yo viví.
Sandy says everything we've gone through was a terrible trauma. Then she adds,
no quiero recordar ya nada más.
I want to forget it all.
That story was produced by Nina Satija, who co-reports for the Texas Tribune and reveals Anayansi Diaz-Cortez. Sandy's lucky. She was one of the first parents to be reunited with all her kids. There are still more than 100 children who may never see their parents again because those parents have already been deported. For Sandy, an immigration judge has decided that she and her kids can remain in the U.S. for now. It could be years before she knows if she's allowed to stay. Today's show was produced by Anayansi Diaz-Cortez, Nina Satija, and Casey Miner. Brett Myers edited the show with help from Ziva Brandstetter. We have production support from Phoebe Petrovic, Rachel DeLeon, Stan Alcorn, and Nadia Humden. Thanks also to Juan Luis Garcia Hernandez and Dave Harmon from the Texas Tribune. Our production manager is Mwende Inahosa. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. Krista Scharfenberg is our CEO. Our senior supervising editor is Taki Telenitis, and Kevin Sullivan is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Camerado, Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reeve and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.